This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Three UN agencies and the government of South Sudan announced Monday famine has struck two counties in Unity State, affecting more than 100,000 people and could spread further. The country has been plagued by conflict and economic crisis since war broke out in December 2013.
That's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details next also. Unprecedented drought hits Somalia. Millions are at risk. And a cyclone causes $12 million worth of damage in Mozambique. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, three UN agencies and the government of South Sudan announced today famine has struck two counties in Unity State, affecting more than 100,000 people and could spread further. The country has been plagued by conflict and economic crisis since war broke out in December 2013. From Nairobi, Jill Craig has more.
Famine can now be added to the list of South Sudan's problems. According to the government and the UN International Children's Fund, Food and Agriculture Organization, and World Food Program, they say conflict, a collapsing economy, high food prices, and low agricultural production are to blame for food insecurity across the country, and now for famine in two counties in southern Unity State. Chalice McDonough, spokeswoman for the UN Food Program in East Africa, explains the Joint Technical Committee's decision.
That means that the conditions have deteriorated to pretty much the worst on the scale that we use to measure food security. You've got nutrition rates that are astronomical. You've got people with very limited access to food. The mortality rate is above the level that's required. They have announced that although you've got a bad food security situation throughout the country, that in those two specific counties, things are about as bad as they can get.
While many people are struggling with food insecurity, McDonough says there is a reason famine has struck these two areas in particular.
It's because the conflict has been intense there, or there's been, you know, a lot of different armed groups. It's been very difficult to negotiate safe access, both for the aid workers and for the people that they're trying to assist, so that you can be sure that if you go in and give food and other types of assistance to people, that they're not going to be attacked because of the food.
1 million people are classified as being on the brink of famine. According to numbers released by the government and the United Nations, an estimated 5 million South Sudanese are severely food insecure, a number projected to increase to 5.5 million people, or roughly half of South Sudan's population, by July. The chairman of South Sudan's National Bureau of Statistics released a statement acknowledging the concerns of this projection and urging all actors to scale up their efforts in the coming months in order to prevent further deterioration of food insecurity and malnutrition in the country. McDonough adds that the agricultural sector in South Sudan is undeveloped under usual conditions, but the current situation prevents people from improving it.
If we had peace and could work on agricultural development, then yes, in the long run, there's enormous potential for South Sudanese agriculture. But you can't farm when you're fighting, or you can't farm when it's not safe to go into your fields because somebody else is fighting.
Since the start of the war in December 2013, tens of thousands of people have died. The UN Refugee Agency says neighboring Uganda is hosting roughly 700,000 South Sudanese refugees as people continue to flee. Additionally, the UN is expressing concern that critical shortages in food assistance are affecting 2 million refugees in 10 countries across Africa. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, is among the humanitarian agencies responding to the famine in South Sudan's Unity State. Jeremy Hopkins is UNICEF's representative in South Sudan from the capital Juba. He told VOA's Jody Kapua that the situation in Unity State reflects a much larger problem in the country.
So this forms part of a much bigger caseload, if you like, a much bigger problem that children are facing. The total number of malnourished children is estimated at 1.1 million children. Now, those in Unity who are now directly affected by the famine form a part of this statistic. So we have about 40 partners across the country with whom we work to provide nutrition services to malnourished children. specifically in Unity State, where access is extremely difficult. We work actually with the World Food Program on what we call rapid response missions, where we fly in literally with all the equipment we need and the personnel we need to do quick, rapid assessments and responses on the ground. So we would come in and provide treatment for malnourished children and then enroll them in a treatment regime for several months until they're cured. Now, so far this year, we have treated across the country, I should say, about 11,000 severely acutely malnourished children. But we estimate the total caseload in South Sudan in general to be about 275,000 acutely malnourished children. An acutely malnourished child has a high risk of dying, 9 times higher than a child who's not sick.
Would you explain why access is so difficult in Unity State?
Well, it's right in the middle of the country, or up towards the north. So it's far away from the urban centers. There has been conflict in many parts of the country over the last year or over the last couple of years, which make access difficult from a security perspective. In addition, there's the question of logistics and road transport and river transport, which is very seasonal. Right now, we are actually in the dry season, but we'll be moving to the rainy season, and that makes it, again, difficult in a different way to get our supplies where they're needed. So it's a mixture of secure, safe access and logistical challenges.
Now, the UN has said it is worried that this situation, this famine situation, could spread to other parts of South Sudan.
Well, of course, it's a possibility, but of course, it depends on the weather beyond, you know, the second half of the year, and of course, what happens in terms of security and the conflict and the national dialogue and the peace processes. So we really hope that all parties to the conflict will allow humanitarian access to children and people in need all over the country, which allows us really to mitigate the worst effects of such a drought or any such natural phenomenon to get the assistance where it's needed. I think there's one point which I think is interesting from a sort of programmatic perspective, if I may, which is your status of nutrition. It indicates several different deprivations, and they include access to health services and your ability to access safe drinking water. So it's not just about food. If you get a spike in malnutrition and large numbers of malnourished children, it normally means there is a multiple failure across many different sectors. And so any response to malnutrition has to tackle a variety of fronts to provide safe water, basic health services, and nutritious food for children who are already malnourished.
Jeremy Hopkins is UNICEF's representative in South Sudan from the capital Juba. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua. Somalia faces an unprecedented drought that experts say could lead to famine if rains failed again. Millions are at risk amid massive deaths of livestock. Jason Patinkin reports from the northern Somaliland region.
Even the hyenas will not eat the carcasses of Mohammed Adan Gulad's livestock. There is too little meat on the bones of the sheep, goats, and camels which litter the parched landscape after a year of drought. Gulad says he had 550 head of livestock before the drought, but only 50 remain. Herds of animals are dying across Somalia following two failed rainy seasons. Here in Somaliland in the northwest, at least 40% of goats and sheep have perished, more than 10 million animals. If April's rains fail again, people may be next. The United Nations says more than 6 million people need food aid in all of Somalia, and 40 have died already in Somaliland, according to the National Drought Committee. Aid agencies in the government have sent water trucks to fill dried wells in Somaliland. Each morning, dozens of herders with hundreds of animals flock to the wells. The reach of the water trucks, however, is limited. Herder Mohammed Ibrahim Yassin says only a few dozen of his animals were strong enough to walk 20 kilometers to this well. He said more than 100 of his animals were too weak to walk but too skinny to sell. Yassin says that if the rains come in April, his herd will survive. But if there is no rain, he does not think they will make it. For the family of Gilo Ismail Mohammed, future rain is too late. During the past 7 months, they lost their 100 camels whose milk they sold for income. Now they are destitute, depending on handouts to survive. She says their life before will not come back. Now they have a new life, which Allah has given them. Mohammed, in her 70s, says she has never seen a drought like this. It is widespread. It is everywhere, she says. Aid groups are short on funding. The United Nations has appealed for more than $800 million to deal with the drought. The National Drought Committee has raised less than $7 million. Save the Children aid worker Mukhtar Mohammed Hassan is delivering water to herders and cash to those who lost all their animals.
What's coming from the international community, from the donors, and even the local fundraising and the way people are supporting, you find that it's just a drop in the ocean. It's not contributing much.
Mohammed Musa is the director of the National Environment Research and Disaster Preparedness Agency. He blames the United Nations for moving too slowly.
We need help, and we need immediate. It goes all the way to New York, some of our group is by that time, the people are dead, the people are finished.
For millions in Somalia, surviving the drought is a race against time. Jason Patinkin for VOA News in Burao, Somaliland.
15 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. For the second time since Friday, African migrants have stormed the fences at the Spanish enclave of Ceuta on the Moroccan border. Ceuta is one of two Spanish enclaves in North Africa and is considered a gateway for migrants into Europe. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
300 migrants crossed the border between Morocco and Spain at Ceuta on Monday. So these young, desperate migrants climbed over the border fence into the Spanish North African territory, and they were completely ecstatic, jubilant, euphoric. Some were kissing the ground, others were shouting up, "Thank you, Lord," and "Viva España, long live Spain." Even though they were damaging their hands and their feet and their clothes were torn after they scaled that barrier. Now, Ceuta and Melilla, another Spanish territory in North Africa, have the European Union's only land border with Africa. So these entry points are quite critical for these migrants who've been kept on the other side or have been forced to swim along the coast to try and get across the Mediterranean. So this arrival has just come after we saw around 500 cross this fence on Friday, and that's one of the biggest entries since this big barrier was reinforced in 2005. And it also comes while there's a dispute going on between Morocco and the EU over a farming and fishing deal.
Were there any injuries on this occasion?
We don't seem to have any reports of serious injuries. We did see that on Friday. There were some clashes between migrants and police guards on that border area, and two or three people were taken to hospital. This time it seems to be minor injuries. We're not seeing any reports of anyone being involved in clashes with authorities or being taken away for hospital care. So maybe we'll hear more about that as the day goes on.
Any word what happens to these migrants once they enter Ceuta?
On Friday, migrants who crossed that border area seemed to be rounded up, but others were fleeing fairly quickly from the area. So I think their goal is to obviously get away from the border area as quickly as possible and somehow make their way away from that area so that they won't be detected and they won't be picked up and they won't be asked to go back or be processed in any way, but it's really not clear what happens to them once they cross that border.
Let me ask you about an incident now in Italy, in Milan. There was vandalism at a cathedral there. Would you tell us about that?
Milan has a huge cathedral that's very famous, the Duomo, with an enormous square or piazza right in front of it. And the authorities there have been planting new palm trees to decorate and renovate the piazza. And these palm trees have become a terrible symbol of anti-migrant attitudes in Italy. And three of the trees were set alight at the weekend, set alight by vandals. And that seems to have been provoked after protests on Saturday, organized by the Anti-Immigrant Northern League and Casa Pound, a radical right-wing movement. And demonstrators waved the Italian flag in front of banners that were alleging that this piazza was becoming Africanized. They talked about the Africanization of this piazza. And this has really been an incredible symbol for the anti-immigrant Northern League party, where the leader was saying the other day, the only thing missing from these palm trees are monkeys. And using it to really say it's a symbol of everything that's wrong with Italy, talking about an invasion of African migrants and really saying that these are not native trees and shouldn't be there. It's another indication of some of the division that we're seeing initially, the anti-immigrant attitudes that are emerging in some parts of the country. Quite a disturbing trend, I think, at this point.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. Cyclone Dino has caused more than $12 million in damage in Mozambique after it made landfall last Wednesday along the southern coast. AFP reports at least 7 people were killed and more than 50 injured. The heavy rains and powerful winds struck Inhambane province the hardest. Officials say about 22,000 homes were damaged or destroyed, along with nearly 50 hospitals and more than 100 school or public buildings. Also, about 30,000 hectares of crops were destroyed. That could affect food security in a province that has been suffering from drought. Dino weakened and dissipated over the weekend after it reached Namibia. The storm also caused some damage in Zimbabwe and South Africa. An anti-poaching unit operating on the western side of Zimbabwe's Matusadona National Park says no elephants have been poached for nearly 2 years. The unit is hoping its vigilance can be copied nationwide and that, combined with education efforts, it will help stamp out poaching. Sebastian Mumfu reports from the Matusadona area on the border with Zimbabwe.
Permission to carry on, sir.
Carry on.
Thank you, sir.
Members of the Bumi Hills anti-poaching unit start their day with the drills before they get into the bush looking for poachers. Poachers aim for anything from elephants to rhinos to small game for meat. But Nick Milne, the founder and head of the Bumi Hills Foundation, says his anti-poaching unit has been successful.
We have eliminated elephant poaching completely for the last almost 2 years. March 2015 was the last recorded elephant carcass. But our area is very small. All we've done is we've pushed the problem further afield. And we know from our neighbouring areas that the elephant poaching has increased in those areas. So we are in the process at the moment of trying to work together with everyone else and trying to increase our collaborative effort. Because there's a lot being done on the ground. But it's quite fragmented at this stage. So it's not very effective.
The Great Elephant Census, funded by philanthropist Paul Allen about 20 years ago, concluded that the elephant population had decreased by 75% in this area. That motivated Milne to get into conservation effort. He says an anti-poaching program can only yield results if local communities are involved.
Meaning to say these poachers, they took the tusks and horns of rhinos and sold them to...
That is a teacher at Kaujumba Primary School in Kariba talking with students about the importance of wildlife. Opamu Chinguri, Zimbabwe's Minister of Environment, says the Sebungwe area is susceptible to poaching as poor local communities are paid by poachers from Zambia. She says as a result, her government has introduced a syllabus in Zimbabwean schools to ensure students value wildlife and promote anti-poaching drive efforts. She explains why Matusadona National Park is one of the most vulnerable areas to poaching in Africa.
But poaching also, you need to understand that from the Zimbabwean side, we do have a national park. But when it comes to Zambia, there are communities. So we have been getting a lot of poachers also from the other side. And we can't change that. So we are having to introduce drones to make sure there is more patrols along the river. So we are having to introduce even boats, also technology, to make sure that we are also up to date with the poachers.
But so far, no boats or drones owned by the Zimbabwe government are operating in Matusadona National Park, leaving wildlife at the mercy of poachers, save for the places which are protected by the Bumi Hills Foundation's anti-poaching unit.
Yeah, I'll copy that, mate. All right, cheers. Thanks.
That is the unit tracking some suspected poachers on Lake Kariba. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News on the northwest border of Matusaduna National Park, Kariba, Zimbabwe.
Cameroon has burned more than 3 tons of pangolin skins and scales seized from smugglers and destined for Asian countries. Officials say by burning the skins of the world's most trafficked mammal and arresting smugglers, it is sending a strong signal that Cameroon will no longer be a country where poaching and smuggling run rampant. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon Minister of Forestry and Wildlife, Philip Ngolengwese, says the pangolin skins and scales were seized on 3 occasions at the Douala and Yaoundé International Airports. He says 7 suspects are answering charges in Cameroon law courts.
Nous sensibilisons d'abord les populations pour comprendre que
he says they have educated the population that although pangolins are good to eat and are in high demand in Asian countries, they are now totally protected and should never be killed. He says all licenses to hunt in Cameroon indicate that pangolins should not be killed. He said pangolins should not be touched and weapons should be taken from pangolin poachers. Cameroon has decided the mammals, which resemble anteaters and are completely covered in scales, are going to be permanently protected. Last June, Hong Kong authorities seized 4 tons of pangolin scales being smuggled from Cameroon to Asian countries. According to Cameroon wildlife law, anybody arrested or found in possession of parts or the whole of a protected wild animal is presumed to have captured or killed that animal and is liable to a prison term of 1 to 3 years and or a 10 million CFA francs, that is $20,000 maximum fine. The Pangolin Specialist Group of the IUCN, the International Union for Conservation of Nature, reports that since 2012, more than 20,000 kilograms of scales of African pangolins bound for Asia have been seized either in Africa, Asia, or Europe. It is also estimated that more than 1 million pangolins have been taken from the wild in the last decade. Pangolins are under severe threat from criminals supplying China, Vietnam, and Malaysia, where the meat is considered a delicacy and their scales are thought to contain ingredients important in traditional medicine. Last September, during the 17th Conference of Parties, COP17, to the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, held in Cape Town, South Africa, countries united to ban international commercial trade in pangolins, said to be the world's most trafficked mammals. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. And thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, U.S. President Donald Trump has made his first phone calls to African heads of state, speaking with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari and South African President Jacob Zuma. An in-depth discussion on the expectations of the president's engagement with Africa. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.